I'm a big believer that experience teaches. My goal with this show is to have guests to share their experience so that they can tell you what it's like, what they did right, and what they did wrong. And I'm going to share the same. Look, I'm not trying to regurgitate stuff you can find on the internet. I'm going to tell you how it really is and what it's really like to own your own place.
This is the National Restaurant Owners Podcast with your host, Kyle and Sarah.
Today's episode of the National Restaurant Owners Podcast is brought to you by 7Shifts, a team management platform built specifically for restaurants. It's your secret weapon to better understand your restaurant, hit labor targets, and keep your entire team connected. I know firsthand how hard it can be to stay organized with schedules and communications. Like, hey, Timmy said he was going to cover for Susie, but actually Susie can't make it, so I'm covering. What? That's not how we're going to run this business, right? You need to be more organized. I mean, your schedule and your staff communication really are two crucial functions of running a successful restaurant business. But 7Shifts makes it so much easier. You can drag and drop scheduling. There's in-app communication, plus things like task management, tip management, and a whole lot more. It really has benefits at every single level. I mean, if I still had my restaurant, 1,000%, I would have 7Shifts in place to eliminate all that nonsense. Plus, it integrates with other systems you're already running, like POS, payroll. And because you guys are such loyal listeners of this show, and 7Shifts is so nice, you can get 3 months absolutely free. So get started at www.7shifts.com/national-restaurant-owners-podcast.com. That's the number 7shifts.com/national-restaurant-owners-podcast to get 3 months for free. All right, guys, welcome back to the National Restaurant Owners Podcast. I'm your host, Kyle and Sarah, and thank you for making us the number one and fastest growing podcast for independent restaurant owners in the country. Today, my guest is Jordan Bush, the founder and CEO of 7Shifts, a team management platform that helps restaurants manage their workforce. 7Shifts, and I love this, originally began as a simple tool that Jordan developed to help his dad manage the work schedule at the Quizno franchises, which is real. We're going to get into that. But since then, it's obviously has evolved into one of the leading restaurant team management platforms. In fact, 7Shifts is used by over 35,000 restaurants worldwide and trusted by over 700,000 restaurant professionals. Jordan is on a mission to simplify team management and improve performance for restaurants. Jordan, thanks so much for taking the time to join me today.
Thanks for having me.
I feel like this 7Shifts is going to cause a drastic reduction in the amount of post-it notes in restaurants that people put their schedules on and leave for managers. So there's going to be a drastic reduction in post whoever makes those. So sorry to them. But I would love to know what you saw, because having listened to some of the other shows you're on, at your dad's shop, that made you realize there's got to be a better way to handle this, Dad.
Yeah, it was really just experiencing it firsthand. And I always felt that because early days, I was starting to learn how to build websites, and I love the convenience of being able to check information from wherever. Mm. And it was just kind of odd to me that I couldn't check my schedule from home and I'd have to call into the store all the time. Mm. And this was what everybody did, but it was so normal at the time.
Yeah.
That's what you wouldn't even really question it. So I think that's really where the idea started. And because I had this fascination of using technology to solve problems, I started building something where my dad was able to take that spreadsheet that he builds and just upload it online, and staff could all log in with the same username and password. It wasn't very secure, and they could all download it. And it was that, again, like people talk in software about small iterative approaches to kind of what becomes a much bigger product. And that was the smallest, most iterative approach I can imagine in 7Shifts history, was taking a spreadsheet and just making it downloadable using one username and password for everyone.
Yeah, that's amazing. You're throwing me back to the future, because I remember calling places and then whoever was working was like, oh, let me go check. And they'd put the phone down and they'd have to run back and look for like the little legal notepad on the door even. I mean, that's what I grew up with. That's what we started with. But thank God they went online, because it just made so much sense. And it's only been, recently, and I'm sure that's your mission, is to get this in more restaurants, obviously. But in terms of technology, I mean, everyone's on their phones anyway, right? If they can make it a lot easier to find out what their schedule is and text each other and communicate, it seems like the way to go.
Yeah, especially given this industry employs the highest number of teenagers out of any private industry. What do a lot of teenagers have? They have a phone.
Yeah.
A lot of them have smartphones. And it's just becoming more prevalent. So I think that it's becoming what was once a nice to have is becoming a need to have.
Yeah.
As it relates to workers evaluating employers and what kind of technology they're using, because ultimately it should make life easier for both the operator and the workers within the establishment.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, that's the goal, right? To make life easier. And restaurants have historically been not early adopters to technology, right? I mean, I have a buddy here who is still evaluating POS systems. You know, he's a very successful restaurant, but he's not quite, hasn't grasped onto that yet. So,
You know, it's really interesting because even when we were starting out early, I think this was like 2014. And we said, despite it starting for my dad's Quiznos locations, we did start to take on a lot of different industries. Mm. And we said, you know, instead of being pulled in all these directions on what to build and feeling like we have no cohesive vision, you know, it's like the customers were dictating it for us. And on account of that, you had someone that was using us for their pet store, one person that was using us for their restaurants, and some folks were using us for, you know, say like a medical facility. And it just kind of, the shoe felt okay. It didn't fit perfectly. And so we said, we're going to focus purely on restaurants. And the reaction around that was kind of met with, well, restaurants can't afford anything. Why are you going to build something for an industry that is not adopting or probably will never adopt technology? And I think we really felt that because restaurants are so critical to our society and we don't see them going anywhere anytime soon, this was an opportunity for us to really build for the segment that has largely been ignored. Because margins are so tight, and you know, there's a lot of folks stuck in their ways of wanting to just do what they always did.
But we
really took a bet along with some other larger, very well-funded players of just building really great technology that makes their life easier. And now we're still seeing mass adoption from the old ways of doing things. And like you said, your buddy that's going from an older POS system. I mean, there's so many of those out there. That are just kind of thinking about making that change right now. But it's an exciting time.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a great perspective to have, is that it's not like a challenge. Well, it is a challenge, right? But it's an opportunity. It's an opportunity to bring something to you and show these folks how they can run their business more efficiently. And I think one of the challenges that I know you're probably, you know, front center for you, and I hear all the time, actually, just before this phone call speaking, somebody asked how their new location was going. They said, well, we're not anywhere because we can't find any cooks. Hiring and the trouble, the situation around finding employees, I feel like it's always been an issue for restaurants. And I don't want to diminish the effect of the pandemic and things of that nature, but I really see it as a cultural issue in a lot of these cases. So what are your thoughts on hiring right now for the restaurant folks?
When you say cultural issue, can I just ask, like, what do you mean by that?
I mean, I'm going to get in trouble now. All right. Here's what I think. This is what I'm not usually one to bite my tongue. So I'll tell you, you know, the days of line cook wanted $13 an hour, come in, right? Like that sign to me now screams, I don't want to work there. But for years it worked, right? It was like, they have a sign up, run over there. And you still see it to this day. But I think it needs to be, you know, I'm a big believer in the Danny Meyer model. You know, you treat the employees correctly, they're going to treat the guests correctly, and it's going to be beneficial for the business. So I think front and center on that is, how are you treating your staff? How are they being compensated, paid vacation, bonuses, health benefits? I see those all as cultural elements.
Yeah, very, very great call, Ed, and I very much agree with you on all of those points. I think the challenge that we see is, and it seems like the pandemic really just poured salt into a wound that was already open. Really, there was nothing new that took place, you know, that the pandemic caused. It just said, oh my God, like, you know, this is challenging. These people are working like crazy hours. They're getting paid very little. And there's other opportunities that, you know, they don't have to, you know, kind of kill themselves over working crazy hours and are being yelled at the customers, where they can actually make a better wage and they can get these benefits. And so if you look at the numbers, we're still quote unquote missing a million restaurant workers than what we had prior to the pandemic. And I think that, you know, workers are still around, but there's this interesting push and pull where we talk to some operators and they're like, oh, I just need a butted seat. Mm. And the workers are going like, well, I don't want to be just a butted seat. I just want, I want like a great place to work. I want benefits and I want flexibility.
Yep.
And it's like, and they're just kind of talking at different ends and it seems like there's no kind of meeting of the minds. And so because we work with so many operators, we get to see some of the more successful ones and we get to understand some of the things they're doing. Mm. But I will say, just to kind of dig into like that kind of cultural message that you felt where you walk by that sign and you go like, oh, that smells bad news for me. Like they're turning over like crazy. Like that's probably not a place I want to work. Mm-hmm. That is interesting. And I think that if we think that this industry should be regarded as a profession, then there are some serious underlying changes that need to take place. And I think a lot of those are controversial. And I think there's a lot of stuff within the tipping realm that is like, you know, kind of the way we built the industry and the way people built businesses within the industry kind of forever fostered that low wage. And kind of relied on consumers to subsidize it in a lot of these states. And so I think that there's like really, there's really kind of foundational things that would need to change. So I think asking the question, do we want to make this an industry that is regarded as a profession? And if so, those are big changes that need to take place. If we want this industry to just be kind of like, you know, a halfway point where it's just like, oh, I'm just going to school and like, that's all I'll ever, like, I'm just here for like 6 months or 3 months and then I'm out. Then okay, you know, kind of keep doing what you're doing and don't change anything. But I think that something does need to change.
Yeah.
And because operators are running businesses, they are in their own power to make those changes themselves. And I think we're starting to see that. We're starting to see people do things differently. And unfortunately, the broader industry is not there quite yet.
Yeah.
We're trying to figure out how to make that work, right? Those things you talked about better wages, benefits, valuing culture, the, you know, Danny Meyer famously quoted, culture is the sum of all the behaviors you celebrate minus the ones you tolerate. Mm. And how many operators are thinking that way? Like they have other things that they're thinking about. And that's low on the totem pole. And so there's a lot of things that, it's a big thing to unpack is what I'm just trying to say.
Yeah, no, it is. And I think it's not universal. It should be universally applied, right? But to your point, you know, an ice cream shop is not necessarily looking to build, you know, a seasonal ice cream shop just needs people there to scoop ice cream from, you know, the spring to the fall, right? They need people there. Maybe they're not building this big thing that a larger restaurant group may be looking to do. But I think in so many cases, it's just, you know, odd, I guess is the word I would use, that the pandemic brought this to light. But like staff has been screaming this at restaurants for years, right? Mm-hmm. And I remember distinctly when we had two locations and there was a girl, she was fantastic and she only wanted to work lunches. And we were like, oh man, we could really use her at night. We're short at night. She'd be great at night. And she just looked at us. She had to be like 19. And we were like, you can make so much more money. It would be great. And she's just like, you guys don't get it. For me, it's not about the money. I need to spend time with my daughter, you know, and that's what's important to me. And we were just like, oh, you know, like we were so head down in the business, folks, and we need a body to fill that. She would be great. She would sell more, et cetera, that we weren't listening. I think that's a key component to restaurants is listening. Hey, what do you guys think would make this more attractive, a more attractive workplace for the people that we need to bring in here?
100%. And when that feedback loop, there's a lot of, like, I think it's more common in certain industries to kind of hear that feedback. Like we're in the tech industry. There's a lot of competition. There's a lot of, and people are constantly trying to push the bounds of how they can make their place a great place to work. Mm-hmm. And it's highly competitive, but to do that, you're asking for feedback from your workers. And I think that when we surveyed folks, it was like 90%+ of folks never did an exit interview with their staff in the restaurant industry. It's like, oh, they left. Why? I don't know. It's like, okay. Well, there's a lot of reasons that someone leaves. But you know, when we surveyed nearly 4,000 restaurant workers as to why they left their jobs, we segmented that by folks that were under the age of 25 and over the age of 25. The top reason for both categories was pay. The second reason for both categories was flexibility. So kind of playing off your point around important to be with her daughter. And then that third most important thing and why people left their jobs, for folks under 25, it was, hey, I'm going back to school. Mm. For folks over 25, it was lack of manager recognition or career growth opportunities. Mm. And so I'm not saying, I guess my belief is not that that you necessarily have to work in a restaurant for the sake of it being your only long-term career path.
Right.
But I think what we're saying here is your experience that you have in a restaurant and in the hospitality industry should be a positive one and should be something where you can learn some really core skill sets to take with you for whatever you decide to do next. And having that great reputation in hospitality is really important because you learn so many important skills in the hospitality space.
I agree.
And dealing with people is probably the number one most difficult thing for people to do.
Oh yeah.
And what a great skill to learn regardless of if you stay in the industry or not.
Yeah. It's there's so many
and
things.
Teams. That, and working with a team.
Oh yeah.
Like that's you're working one. With your servers, your bartenders, your cooks, you know, celebrating the wins and having that energy at the end of the night. And I just think like there's so many great things in restaurants that are going to be, you're going to carry with you in life and that are going to benefit you.
Yeah, I agree. I always say that, you know, you learn almost every aspect of any kind of job you're going to have after this that in a restaurant. Like you, to your point, working with a team, how to sell, how to market, how to deal with conflict, how to resolve issues, things of that nature. And it is seen that has been seen as sort of like, you know, a rest stop on the way to something else for a lot of people. But for more and more people, it's a career path. And I think that they're with the more serious those folks are taking it and that they want to be the older folks, to your point, they want to have a say, you know, they want to have, you know, hey, I think we should add this wine to the list. Or have we ever thought about, you know, opening for brunch on Saturdays too? And when those things, I think when they have buy-in at that level, I think it's, they feel like they're being heard, and B, they feel like just a sense of I'm a part of something. They have some buy-in now. And I think that goes a long way in ultimately making a better guest experience.
Yeah, absolutely. I think people aren't so different in any industry. Like I think that it's a bit of a cop-out for some folks to think that, you know, we're in the restaurant industry, like it's just how it is, because we've heard that. Mm-hmm. And you know, someone leaves, I just go through the resume stack and this is just how it is. It's just a revolving door.
Yeah.
And it's so shocking to me that, you know, there is kind of this onus that is not taking place on you as an employer on how you can improve things. And I have a lot of empathy for restaurant operators because it's almost like they're running a startup for like the rest of their lives. Like they're so busy and they're just grinding and with no end in sight. But there are things that they could be doing to make, to ease the workload, to like it, the cost and benefit of having an amazing manager that can run the store for you so that you can go do other things with your family is like, it's insane. It's irreplaceable to kind of have that. And so, you know, to overpay for those folks, for you to have some sanity is really critical. And I think that, I think we sometimes just get lost in the dollars and cents of it all and not think about replacement costs of a great person that's going to drive business to you and a great manager that empowers your people, that keeps the team there.
Yeah. I mean, the management thing is huge. I remember also that once we had that buffer, like it was hard to be the person writing the schedule, cutting the checks and dealing with the people who were, you know, it was just a lot, you know, and then when we did hire that, we did find that person, it was like like an angel. I still talk to him this day, and it's great. But to me, what this also is about is retention, like keeping the staff that you want there. I mean, in terms of that, why do restaurants need to be so focused on retaining these people? I mean, I think I know the answer, but I know you guys have an interesting take on it as well.
Yeah, it's the cost of losing a worker in the restaurant industry, and there's various studies on this. Some say it's $2,500, some say it's $5,000, and you know, losing a manager is somewhere I think in the $10,000 to $15,000 range, depending on what type of establishment you are running. And I think that it's so important that these operators are going to do everything they can to retain great people, because once someone is trained and onboarded and starts to learn everything and gels with the team, that's obviously a person and team that you want to keep long term, because they're going to benefit your business. Mm. And how much do you want to spend as an operator just kind of going through the resume stack and hiring people? Like, you see it in sports, right? A great sports team is insane, and you have to have the right players on the team. And I think it's very similar in hospitality. So I think when it comes to retention, some of the best operators that we are seeing are understand that cost first and foremost, and they're also asking for feedback using the Seven Chefs product. Like, I don't mean to plug our product. It doesn't need to be Seven Chefs. It can be any form of feedback. Whether it's, I've seen people literally have like boxes at the restaurant with like sticky notes where they write kind of feedback on and they drop them in anonymously, just to kind of get that feedback circulating. And I think that's really powerful, because you want to build that culture of high trust and transparency, because people will talk about that and you'll have better retention.
Yeah.
You know a lot of other friends. When I worked at Quiznos, I brought most of my friends in to work at Quiznos.
Oh yeah.
I thought it was great to work at. And we all it was cool to work with all your friends. And trust me, we did get some work done. it was great to do that. And I think that the power of word of mouth is really important too, that people underestimate. So hire a few great people. They often know other great people, and their reputation's on the line. So they want to make sure they're bringing great people. So I think focusing, there's two parts of it. It's understanding the hiring process and how you're screening folks, and really investing in those ones that are great. And I often tell folks, just think about who you would clone. Who do you think is great today? If you could clone them into infinity, who are they? And most people can name one or two people that there's, you know, if we could clone like Samantha or John, you know, we'd be rocking. That's okay. Well, let's talk about what makes those people really special. What traits do they have? What behaviors do they have? And we start going through them, and you find that there's some core sets of behaviors they have that others don't. And well, guess what? That's like step one of establishing your core values.
Yeah.
And now you can start building questions in your screening process around these traits to try and suss out whether or not these are the right people. And again, it's little lightweight things you can do to improve that process. And then obviously you need to keep that feedback loop humming, because you want those people to stay. So you want to make sure they're engaged and empowered and feel like they're heard.
Yeah. And that they are, you know, your staff is your best, to me, they're your best PR machine, especially when it comes to, you know, if they're like, yeah, they totally worked around my schedule. I make good money. The staff is great. The owner is great. And it's just a great environment. I mean, that's sales 101, right? Like, I know, like, and trust my friend. They just told me it's a great place to work and they need people. Where do I sign up? And I need a job. Where do I sign up? And it's such an interesting dynamic, right? Because it's like restaurants just have never really grasped that this is, you know, a key component of their business. They took for granted the fact that that somebody just needing a job was enough. But now all these other things, and then realizing that you want another Becky, you want another Tommy in here, then you talk to them and say, hey, you know, do you like working here? What can we do better? And I think to your point there, I think you hit the nail on the head. That's the way to do it.
Yeah. Why do you want to be here?
Yeah.
And why, and like, seriously, like, why do you like working here? And What can we do better? And do you know any other folks that would think they'd want this role? And we do that at our company as well. And again, like a lot of the stuff is company agnostic. It's just the time and energy that you can use to kind of like implement them. And there's lightweight ways you can do a lot of this stuff. You have to start by first kind of saying that you are willing to embrace these types of philosophies for the betterment of the industry.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's another thing from the pandemic was if the owners who took the opportunity to look themselves in the mirror and say, hey, you know what, maybe I could do some things a little bit better. I'm hearing this stuff, you know, things aren't going to be the way they always used to be. And maybe that's the answer. So I think that it does scream to me when I hear that, like, hey, maybe they're not positioning themselves well. Like, I mean, even things like the way you write your ad, I think is important. You know, I mean, have you guys, you know, what are some best practices that you've seen? You talk to so many restaurants. What are some best practices you've seen of some of these groups out here that are actually maybe not struggling as much with the retention and the hiring of their staff?
Yeah, the groups that are not struggling, that are actually getting an influx of resumes, are paying their people more, and they're very kind of clear about what they stand for and what they kind of celebrate and champion. Because at the end of the day, a lot of these folks also are associating their personal brand to this place that they're working at. They're going to tell their friends they work there. They're telling their family they work there, and they want to be proud of it. You know, that's, I think, a big change and shift that we're seeing, that maybe wasn't the case, you know, 10 years ago. And so those are important things. But I also think that some of these folks are doing different things around their recruitment process. They're posting more videos. They're kind of tapping into that younger segment that is more video centric and doesn't want to read like a 2-page long job description. You know, hey, I'm so-and-so, we're looking for great people. And, you know, they've made a video of like where they work. They're talking about, you know, what it's like to work there, and they're interviewing other employees that are talking about what it's like to work there. And so there are just ways to get creative. We all have a smartphone. Like it's not crazy to take like a quick video that you can post alongside your job applications to try and kind of entice folks a little bit more. It's people are getting a little bit more creative.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, I was saying with the ad read, as we mentioned before, you know, line code $13 an hour ad versus there was a bakery. I had somebody on the show and they were talking about how their bakery ad was like, you know, if you love to wake up early in the morning and the feeling of, you know, making the dough and when the you know, the temperature in the room rising when the ovens come on, and like telling this whole story, it got me fired up. I'm like, wow, that's you're romanticizing the job a little bit. It makes it more enticing. And it shows that the owners have passion, I think, right? Like they actually value what they're doing, and they want somebody who's like-minded. So I think that's a big, big thing that I think is still getting dismissed.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. That's a very great way to, it's through storytelling. At the end of the day, storytelling, whether it's through video or through words, you are telling a story to entice a segment of the population to apply to work at your place. Why is your place so special to work at?
Yeah, exactly.
What did I learn? Who am I going to work with? What's going to be like? And I think that there's a big shift to folks really wanting to understand what the learning opportunities are.
Yeah. Hey, the opportunities, that's it. You know, what opportunity am I going to have by giving my time here? Another thing I know that's sort of front and center for you guys at the moment is this idea of tip pooling. Now, I have always been a huge fan of tip pooling. And after reading through some of the stuff on 7 Shifts, I know that you guys are fans of it for a lot of different reasons. I wonder if you could touch on that and why you guys are such a big proponent of tip pooling and how 7 Shifts is helping restaurants implement.
I think we're big proponents of building products that operators really find valuable and save them tons of time and energy. So I think as it relates to our tip pooling solution, We've done exactly that. We've taken a ton of ways that people do tipping and how they pool their tips, whether it's by points, by percentages, by seniority, by roles, by time of day, day parts. There's so many layers to it. And given that we integrate with a lot of the point of sales, we have our own time and attendance module that does a lot of compliance, especially in states that are highly regulated. We have that data, and I think it was a natural extension for us to say, yeah, how do we make it so they can just click a button and it shows you what everyone needs to get paid in their tips? And I'm going to give away a little bit of what's next, but getting those tips sent directly to the employees' bank accounts is something we've been kind of working on the behind the scenes, kind of real-time tip payouts too. So the tip pooling product is a natural prerequisite to getting to having the employees get their tips as soon as the shift or the day is over. So again, coming back to the fact that we just want to build great products that solve these pain points that restaurateurs hate doing, and don't want to do those operations that are very repetitive and mundane, so they can focus on other more important things like building their business and the cultural aspects of things and how they can market their business as well. So that's our wheelhouse. Our wheelhouse is team management.
And I think that is big. That's a big thing though, because managing your team and the tips is so huge, because especially when you're tip pooling, I know now this could just be my experience, but it's always like, hey, Tommy is one of our better servers. Why should he have to split with Susie, who's not such a great server? Then you have to have the whole team conversation and everyone kind of maybe settles in. They start to compare their money, but inevitably when the check comes and they open it up, they look, you have to pull out the little spreadsheet. You have to look at all these. Hey, no, you put down here that we all got $65 a night. It was actually $68. And you have to go through that whole thing. And again, another reason why I love Seven Shifts is it's all right there, right? Everybody can see it. It's all available for them to take note of and document their own way. And it just, I think, again, goes back to elevating the experience, not only for the team, but again, for the guests. Because if everybody's helping, everyone's making more money if we all do well. I mean, to me, it's a no-brainer. And I've gotten a lot of heat for that comment, but I stand by it.
Yeah, I think what's really, I think that tip pooling is a, it's something that I don't imagine going away anytime soon in the industry. I think that what we can advise and hope that operators do is that we share best practices on how to incentivize and reward your team, and how can you build a structure around tipping that, like you said, rewards the right folks, and also has like a team component to it, right? Like you're a team. And I think that that's a really important aspect as well, is how do you ensure that the back of house kind of feels that as well. And what we've seen some of the other folks do is just say, look, like we're going to split it all equally, back of house, front of house. And because we're a team, and that's how teams win together. And I think you start to see, obviously folks in the servers say, well, I'm not getting as much, I'm not as happy. And back of house is saying, this is awesome. Like I've been back here, cooking and doing all the behind the scenes stuff. And now I'm feeling like I'm part of it. And I think that's a really interesting shift, especially as more restaurants have added that digital aspect to it, where you can kind of order and pay at the table, and someone will bring your food out, and there's an argument to be made of like, maybe in certain places a server's doing less work anyway, so maybe it's actually fair.
Right.
They're not doing as much, but you can do more tables potentially. If the place is bigger and now you're time saving, you do other things that may kind of offset that. But I do think what we've seen, and I'll just kind of use Bar Taco as an example here. Scott Lawton is a They're Seven Shifts partner of ours. And Scott and the team, when the pandemic hit, they obviously had to, you couldn't have servers in the front of house because of all the regulations and things like that where people were scared. So, and so they did not hire the servers back when all the restaurants shut down, and they essentially implemented some of the online ordering stuff at the kind of order and pay at the table, and took all that money and those wages that they were paying servers and put them to the back of house. And what I think is fascinating of what they accomplished was, you can start as a dishwasher at Bar Taco and you can make, I think it's like $47,000 a year if you work full-time hours there. Like, what other restaurant is a dishwasher making $47 a year if they're like just start, like if they're working there 40 hours a week.
Yeah.
It's unheard of.
Yeah. No, they do a great job. And I know that that's a couple other groups around here have adopted a similar approach. And I think it's smart and makes sense and it's fair. And I think it's, again, goes back to building that culture that is so important for restaurants, particularly now. I want to get into a little bit just in the broader scope of things in terms of, you know, technology and the future of the restaurant business. Where do you ultimately see, I know we've talked about a lot during the show, but where do you ultimately see, you know, now we have robots delivering food. They're talking about drones and everything is sort of coming at these operators who were already the CPA, the head chef, the marketer and all this stuff. What role is tech going to play for these restaurants as we move into this new sort of era?
Yeah, I think it's going to really depend on the type of restaurant in terms of how much tech they're able to adopt and how quickly. I think we're seeing probably a lot more automation and robotics within the quick service realm than you may be in the full service realm. Like it's not really appropriate to,
yeah.
I think in the full service realm and it's more complicated, you have finer dining and things like that. But I do think that we are going to continue to see the evolution of the industry whereby it is adopting technology and marrying technology with a great guest experience. And kind of finding that fit is probably going to be dependent on the restaurant itself, but and the customers are also going to help determine that too. You know, if I go to a fine dining restaurant with my wife and I want to have a nice meal, and you know, a robot's going past, it may ruin the mood for me, so I may not want to, you know, dine at that place. So I think consumers are also going to have a bit of a say in terms of what that experience looks like for them. But I do believe that. We've seen this like rapid acceleration of technology. And I think at the end of the day, it's about that guest experience and that employee experience. And where's that balance between tech and people? I think that's going to be an ongoing kind of debate that's probably dependent on the restaurants.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's, you know, I think at every level of restaurant, there's been some new implementation of technology. And I'm sure you've seen it in these last couple of years. It's just, I think the belief is kind of like, you know, everyone's going to have robots and everyone's going to be automated pickups and, you know, drive through only and all this stuff. But that's, you know, a lot of tech's going to be in the background, right? Like it's not going to be, doesn't have to be so front and center for it to work. It doesn't have to be an automat where you just pick up your dumplings from a robot making dumplings. But there's going to be other things that make life easier. And I think to me, I always say to folks, you know, when they say, should I use this software? I heard of this is great. And I heard that POS is great. And I said, look, man, I don't know enough about your business, but is it going to take something off your plate or save you money? Right? Those are your two things, the value of your time and the value of your cash. Like, does that make sense to you? I mean,
oh, 100%.
Yeah.
Like that's like, we're in, you know, violent agreement here. Like it's going to depend on the operator and the restaurant itself in terms of where they strike that balance, because it's going to be different for everyone and the type of restaurant they are.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a big piece too. Well, look, I know you're a busy guy and you have a lot on your plate here to get back to work too. So I appreciate you taking the time out of your schedule and joining us here to share your story and to tell us a little bit more about Seven Shifts. And I really appreciate you guys supporting the show and really supporting the restaurant industry, which is most important. So thank you for that.
Awesome. Thanks, Kyle, for having me.
Yeah, you guys, Jordan and the team over at Seven Shift have been so generous to give you a very special offer, which will be linked in the show notes. So make sure you take advantage of that. And I know you guys have an event here in New York City coming up on the 14th, I think. I got a note the other day about tip pooling. So if you guys are in New York, it'll be a great place to learn a little bit more about Seven Shifts.
Right on.
All right, Jordan. Thanks so much, man. I appreciate it.
All right. Thanks, Kyle. See ya.
Thank you for checking out another episode of the National Restaurant Owners Podcast. If you enjoyed it and you'd like to help support the show, share it with your friends. Share it with your restaurant buddies. Share it with your people who want to be restaurant people. That'd be great. And you could post on your social, too. We would love that. Tag us. We'll share it in kind, right? That's what they say. We'll share it in kind. So you share and we'll share it. And if it's not too much to ask, one other little thing or two other little things, if you could leave us a rating and review, we'd really appreciate it, because that's what kind of like bumps us up and makes us, you know, more visible to other restaurant folks who are looking for us. So that'd be great. To catch all the latest from me personally, you can follow me on Instagram at Kyle and Sarah, also at Kyle and Sarah on Twitter and on TikTok and LinkedIn. So that's great. If you want to follow the show, it's at restaurant_owners_podcast on Instagram. Thanks again, and I'll see you next time.